Check, check, 1, 2. Can you hear me?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Yep. All's well.
All's well that ends well.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man being realistic.
As the story grows.
Welcome back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name is Trav, and on the other side of this microphone, I believe I have a Steven out there.
Yes, you do.
You sound good.
Hello.
Explain why you sound so sultry and sexy.
I got tired of sounding like I was in a can, so I invested a little money in a microphone. Microphone and headphones and a stand and all that. So
headphones.
I got
everyone else has headphones, but out here in Pennsylvania near Philly, we get headphones.
I've got a pop filter.
That was huge.
Yeah. So I, you know, we're a growing, you know, successful podcast. We need to sound right. Rich in tone and right. Velvety right. And sexy. So
velvety and sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good to me.
That's my goal anyway.
Sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, if you no, we ain't doing that. That sounds like great. So dirty now. So yeah, this week we I had the esteemed privilege to talk to Liam Wilson from Dillinger Escape Plan. Super stoked about that because I love Dillinger Escape Plan.
Kind of a big deal, right? That's a pretty well known band.
They're sort of popular. Yeah, yeah.
I saw them open up for Mr. Bungle.
Me too.
Back in the '90s,
the California tour,
and I have shared the stage with them, but although not like, you know, it was a festival, so it's kind of different.
Hey, we'll take it. You open up for Dillinger.
Yeah.
Good enough.
But I mean,
Wait. That only works if you admit that I opened for Fugazi.
Did you?
Mac rocked. 2002.
Crutch, was it?
Yeah.
Played Mac Rock 2002 and Fugazi played it.
They headlined it like Sunday and we played Saturday afternoon. So if you opened for Dillinger, we
it has to be the same
Fugazi.
Day.
Okay, then it was the same day. Change my story to however it sounds that I opened for Fugazi.
But in this case, we played with Converge.
Uh-huh.
Canderia.
Wow.
I believe they, well, Candiri and Dillinger were together. They were like a back-to-back show.
God.
Definitely on the headlining side. Stood on the stage directly behind the drummer. This was Calculating Infinity. This is 2000, the summer of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever crazy stuff they were doing that year.
Chris Penny. And,
yeah, amazing. Yeah, and
bananas.
Couldn't take my eyes off him because I was literally, I could have gave him a back massage. That's how close I was to him while I was playing drums.
Did you give him a back
massage? No, because I think if I would have touched him, he probably would have like killed me with a drum beat because it was what was crazy about my very fast Dillinger story. They had a guy with really long hair breathing fire.
Oh, yeah.
They had some dude on a keyboard who was dressed in a dress shirt, which I thought was kind of weird because of their style. And they had the strobe lights were programmed to the drum beats.
Yep.
So basically, you're having like an epileptic seizure or something.
It was hard like to watch. Yeah.
People with epilepsy could never see this concert. It was like it would kill them.
I saw them indoors with Bungle, and it was I think their lighting show was five strobe lights facing us, and you would just
it was sickening, literally sickening.
The headstock of a guitar, and then you'd see like a foot, and then you'd see like Dimitri's sneaker, and I was just I don't know what's happening up there. There might be 90 people on stage. I can't tell what's going on.
I mean, they were all the hype at that time. It was like all the kids wanted to see Dillinger, and we were kind of like we were doing Tantrum at the time, and we were kind of like, I don't know, we were listening to different things at the time, but we knew they were like untouchable, crazy band. We just weren't really following them. So when we went to see them, I think I got about four songs in, and I remember just being like, they were like the richest chocolate cake you could ever eat. Like you could only take a few bites, but you walk away going like, my God, that cake was so good. That's the only way I could describe that show. Cause we couldn't even stand there for more than a few songs. Cause it just got too, like, I remember feeling physically ill. Like I was like this, the light show and like, if you could just step back and look at it all at once, it was just like a complete catastrophe of insanity. And it was so loud. And it was just like, and after seeing them like that, it's so hard for me to hear them now. Like, it's just such a different sounding band from what I've seen them, but they were, I mean, musicianship wise, I mean, they could have done any genre of music. They could have scored with Ennio Morricone that night. They could have done anything. They were literally like top notch musicians.
I like everything they've done. Even the vocalist change and everything, but I thought one of the coolest parts was to find Greg. When Dimitri left, to find Greg, they did an open audition. They put the second song on Calculating Infinity is called 43% Burnt. Mm-hmm. They posted 43% Burnt without vocals, and you were supposed to download it and do your version.
I wish I would have done that.
Really pioneering. So I guess Greg did like the Dillinger version, and then he sent a second version of him like doing kind of his take on it, and dude's got the job. So it must have did something right. But I remember downloading it and being like, I have an instrumental version of 43% Burnt. That's awesome. So
I would have loved to have like said,
I'll drop that in
a lounge vocal style over it or something.
I smell that whore. That'd be funny.
Do da do da. Yeah, they're amazing.
Bring me a brick. Hey, that'd be great.
Well, you know, Mike Patton used to sing with them for like one EP.
For one little EP.
How cool is that?
That was bananas.
I mean, at the time, I mean, Patton was still like from the formerly functioning Faith No More at the time, which was huge. And then Mr. Bungle kind of was on their way out, but they were like considered, like, if you knew anything about that band, like, they were untouchable. Like, don't F with Mr. Bungle. Right. And then Fantomas, he may even have been doing Tomahawk at the time. Not sure how far back this goes, dude, Patton, that was like at his peak, man. He had like three legendary bands going on.
I saw Fantomas and did not understand what I was watching. It was
crazy. Oh man. I saw Fantomas as well. I actually met Mike Patton.
Yeah.
And cool. Got him to sign my Disco Volante vinyl.
Taint nothing wrong with that.
Nothing. I met Dave Lombardo that night. That was pretty cool.
Nice. Nice.
And my hero, Buzz from Melbourne.
Buzz.
I met them all. I met Trevor. I got Trevor Dunn to sign my record as well. Yeah, that's one of those shows. I went home with bragging rights. But anyway, that's Patton. That's not Dillinger Escape Plan.
I want to read an email. We just got an email from a fellow named Ken Banks, just as we were preparing to do this intro here. I just talked to Liam last week, and we're doing this intro to prep and connect that to this one to give the show some more girth. And
yeah, having me on it will give some girth.
Yeah. I see what you did. And then Ken sends this email, and I want to read it because it's really encouraging. Hey, dude. Call me dude.
Dude.
I just want to send you...
Bro.
I just want to send you a quick message to say how much I enjoyed your podcast with Ben Sharp. I'm a big Cloud Kicker fan, so I checked out the podcast and ended up really enjoying the whole thing. It was great to hear some insight into the music, which is why I came in the first place. But what actually really struck me was how much I enjoyed the conversations about life and everything else. It reminded me of a lot of the conversations I'd had with a few of my friends with a beer in hand out on the deck at night before we wall. I guess that's a typo.
Oh, God. Was that him or you?
That's him. before we all moved to different parts of the country. You guys both sound like the kind of people I'd enjoy hanging out with, and I enjoy your perspective on things. The bit about actually being interested in other views and perspectives on things hit a chord with me. I'll have to check out your other stuff now. Thanks a lot, Ken. Dude. Ken, that's exactly why we're doing this. This email meant a lot to me. That was really cool.
Is it Ken or Kent?
Ken.
Thank you, Ken, for writing in. We appreciate that. And we look forward to more people doing that.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. That was a surprise to me too. I never got a hold of Cloud Kicker before. I never talked to him. Here's a funny story. Do you know how I got a hold of Cloud Kicker?
No.
I went to his website. And
wow, there you go.
Yeah, that's hilarious, right?
Oh, that's the story.
I sent him an email that said, long story short, it comes down to this. I'm a Cloud Kicker fan. I want you to come on my show. You have 3 days to comply or the kitten gets it.
I swear
that's what I said. I don't know why I was in a weird mood that day, and I thought, yeah, screw it. Let's see what happens.
That's awesome.
He wrote back in like 5 days. And he was like, sure, sounds fun.
He purposely waited
days.
He's like, I don't like cats.
He said, sure, sounds fun. And I wrote back and I was like, great, happy to have you on. And I said, however, you didn't comply with the 3 days, so I'm sorry I had to do what I had to do to the kitten or something like that. And all his responses were like short and kind of like, haha, okay. And I'm thinking like as he's typing to me, he's like, oh my God, who is this psychopath, right? But
I'm surprised he was willing to even go that far.
Well, it turns out he has an amazing sense of humor, and Ben and I actually talked after we hit stop. We talked for a long time, and really had some great conversation with him, and we're still talking, man. He's a great dude, and that's the whole point of this podcast is just to grow the community, and everybody is friends with everybody else, and all of our stories are kind of crashing into each other, and I've been so blessed and having a great time with people that we're talking to, and
it's been a fun being involved again.
Yeah. Nice to have you back.
You know, listening to Cloud Kicker, what's his name? Ben
Sharp. Yeah,
listening to Ben, it almost sounded like I was listening to myself or my thoughts, because it was like he has the same exact approach to, you know, being like what he wants to do with his life, and like how do you balance out music with, you know, that, I mean, he's like the poster child for the kind of hardworking independent musicians who aren't going to be rich and famous and, you know, be touring rock stars.
Exactly.
I want to talk to, because I, I really like connecting with people who can help validate it within me why I even bother doing it. Why do I press vinyl for music when I'm not even out touring and selling these things? Because there's something about that format, and there's something about creating something and having it tangibly in your hand, and just being able to do it at your own pace and not have all the politics and the pressures, and just create as it's coming to you, and you know, and just all of that stuff. And just so when he was going on and on about how he exists as an artist and had just this super confidence about not being worried about it and not being like, he means it when he says, like, I want to be with my wife and work and just chill out and enjoy my life. Like, he's not worrying about Cloud Kicker becoming some famous thing, you know. And that's, you know, where I'm at as an artist. And so, I love listening to that kind of, like, it's like a support group. Get all these guys together who are like dads or husbands or whatever and have full-time jobs, but we're all like super inspired still.
I enjoyed the part where I enjoyed it all, but I really found a lot of smiles in the part where I said, you ever think you're going to do something like that again? And he was like, nah, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't even know how it would be possible. Right? You ever think about recording with a live band? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Like he was just like,
yeah,
I'm not worried about the next thing. I'm still just having so much fun that I did what I did. I was blessed with the opportunity to get off a month from work to do it. And he's just totally okay with that moment. He's not mm-hmm. like nostalgic. He's just like, heck yeah, I did that. And that was awesome. And I have that experience forever now. And if you want to talk about it, cool. But I'm not going to try to run out and hit it again. And then I got to figure out how to do it again. I got to figure out how to next step. I got to get to more people. Go, 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 go. Like every band does. Ben is just the most chill dude.
Yeah. It's funny because you listen to guys like that. If you're like an 18-year-old kid and you're like, you got stars in your eyes, it's the most depressing thing in the world to hear. But when you are in the position that he's in or I'm in where it's not a position that was like a prison sentence that's handed to you. It's really like all we do as people is follow what we want to do. You know, if you really wanted to be a touring guy and not have a family, you would have followed that path. It's not like we get in these positions that we're in because of an accidental thing or because of failure. It's because we're still doing what we want to do.
Right.
You know, when I was 20, I wanted to tour. When I was 22 or whatever, I wanted to roam the earth and be sleeping on floors and playing music all the time.
Right.
But you know what? But because it felt normal and it felt natural. And now it feels normal and natural for me to like be comfortable.
Right.
I like to have a wife and
I liken it to a sport, which is kind of a weird analogy, but stick with me. Like when we were kids, we wanted to be professional baseball players, or maybe you wanted to be a professional golfer or something like that because, wow, wouldn't that be awesome? Mm-hmm. Okay, it didn't work. Right. I never made it to the Phillies. I probably could this year. Mm-hmm. They're that bad. But
yeah, really.
But we went to see a game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you got guys that play in church softball leagues, or they play in keg leagues or something like that, where you have to, you know, do a cartwheel on second base and drink a beer or something like that. Like nobody stands in the sidelines and goes, what are you still playing softball for? Cause you think you're going to be professional baseball player. No, I'm doing it because this is fun. I happen to really enjoy doing this. Like, why do you bother fishing? Well, you think you're going to be a professional fisherman and get your own show? No, dude, I just dig fishing. Like, this is like my thing. Like, that's what Ben made me feel like. What, do you think you're going to be a professional musician? Well, first off, he is, because we bought his albums. But, you know, like, no, doing it because I really love doing this. And some people are afforded the opportunity to tour and make it a thing. And other people are just doing it because they love doing it. Everybody's welcome here. We're all hanging out under the same tent. Let's crack one open and talk about it.
And there's always something you wish you could change. Like no matter what side of that fence you're on. Like when I was 20 some years old touring around and playing music, I wanted things to be different. But they were different things. Like back then I would have wanted more people listening to us or to make more money so I could keep traveling. And you're always like working towards something that you're not there yet. But then the flip side of it is now, like it's like, well, what should I change, or what do I want to change? Yeah, I wish that I was playing out more. I wish I was able to sustain pressing vinyl and stuff more easily, or I could do a Kickstarter and be guaranteed, you know, it's like, it's all that stuff. But the thing is, with the internet and everything, you can essentially, with some hard work, with like Cloud Kicker looks like a legitimate band. I never would have thought by looking at his Bandcamp page and listening to his music that that was a dude just doing that by himself and like was putting that out, and he had a 9-to-5. I thought that was a legitimate band. And if it looks like one, and if it sounds like one, and it's the format's there, and you can buy it, you can listen to it, and maybe someday you can see them live, who gives a crap? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And that's, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, like I said, there's things I want to change. Sure. I wish I'm Teachers was doing things a little bit more, or had more time, but I feel like with the record we put out and stuff, like, I feel like that was definitely like my most successful thing. And I did that completely just being, you know, husband guy.
Yep.
Working it up. So yeah, listening to his episode just brings that always back to me, you know.
Thanks for the email. Off my soapbox. Yeah, right. Don't fall.
I wanted to talk about the Megadeth song real quick. Travis.
I'm listening.
Before we go over to the Dillinger interview.
Yes.
Bravo. Very good.
Thank you.
Very good job. I was so jealous of you guys, honestly. from a guy who just loved metal since the 80s, just and couldn't touch a lick of that song. to you know, all three of you brought your A game metal chops to the table. God, how good is Alex, man? Dude's so good. And
best guitarist you've never heard of.
Yeah, right. And I mean, he's seriously one of the best guitarists I've gotten the pleasure to let alone see, but know. Get to say, I can know him on a first name basis. Bruce doesn't, you don't even have to say anything about that guy. I mean, I've clearly been a fan of his since like 92. Super awesome. And dude, that's a sick drum beat, and you nailed it. You killed it. It's an excellent cover, and I'm stoked to be in the universe of that thing you guys did. So
thanks, man. I appreciate
it. Yeah, and I wanted to tell you that personally, and encourage anyone who hasn't heard it yet to go to the As the Story Goes dot Bandcamp.
Did you just say As the Story Goes?
As did I? Because you did before.
It sounded like it.
I may have, but grows. As the story grows at bandcamp.com and get it for free.
Yep.
Because if you charged, Megadeth would have sued you.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Our lawyers, which don't exist.
Well, the As the Story Grows lawyers are pretty good. I mean, we could take like maybe Living Sacrifice to jail or something.
As the Story Grows lawyers would be me Googling, what do you do when Dave Mustaine sues you?
What do you do? I hear he's a Christian. Maybe he won't sue me.
Yeah. Usually they have the good lawyers.
Don't they have a Lutheran in their band? I don't know. I think they're bassist or something.
I didn't take any money for it. It's just a free gift.
No, it's free.
Yeah.
And so apparently Megadeth might hear it and might be good.
Yeah. Bruce, when Ellefson wasn't in Megadeth for a while, I guess he went to work for Peavey, and he was a Peavey rep. I know
that's
Corey from Norma Jean mentioned that too. He was, he was my rep. He's a really nice guy.
That's wild.
Yeah. And he was Bruce's rep. So when this was all said and done, and this was not part of my plan, when this was all said and done, Bruce sat on that little nugget, and he texted me out of the blue, and he's like, by the way, I'm going to be sending this to Dave Ellefson. He's my old PV rep. And I was like, shut up, man. I thought he was just messing with me. And he was like, no. He started sending me pictures of him and Dave Ellefson hanging out. I'm like, oh, man. So then he sent a text to Dave Ellefson, and he sent me a picture of the text. And like Dave That's responded so cool. with like, awesome. And I was like, oh my
God. Wow. So he actually responded to it. Like
he responded with, okay, cool. Like, oh, nice. Or sweet or something short and sweet. And
yeah. So like, another Megadeth cover. Okay, cool.
I was like, dang, dude, Ellefson's going to hear it. That's
rad. Amazing. Hopefully Mustaine hears it and like writes in. Hey, me.
Comes on the show.
Hey, you, it's me. Hey guys, it's Dave. You made fun of Captive Honor. Screw you.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. What was the song about jumping out of the plane?
High speed dirt.
Yeah. It wasn't that bad.
You sound like you're doing Jim Settle.
Yo. Dude. Yeah. The other Megadeth obsessed fan. Yeah. Yo. Dude. Yo. Megadeth. Dude, they rock. Anyway.
Dude.
You don't forget even know. About it. Dude, they blow away Metallica.
Dude, you don't even know. Forget about it. You don't even know.
I think we just turned Jim into even more into like CeCe DeVille.
He sounds like a cross between CeCe DeVille and that lunch lady on The Simpsons.
Enough.
Cry our eyes bloodshot while there's still time. Cause soon it's gone. And you piece of shit. One piece of carpet now spilled onto your death. Barren belongs to you.
I mean, maybe we should be. I don't know if this is worth recording, but
no, it is recording. But I'm not gonna.
Yeah,
I can slice all that off, and I won't say anything. I'm glad we didn't start yet because I have to go tell my son to shut the hell up. He's being too loud. Hold on a minute.
Okay.
Enjoy your coffee.
Yeah.
Hey Ben. Yeah. You two gotta keep it down, man. I'm in a soundproof room, and I can hear you. So you need to grab what you need to play with, and you need to go upstairs. Please? And then shut the door at the top of the steps. Thank you. That's okay. No big deal. Just, you know, I just don't want to be distracted when I'm talking to this man. All right? Thanks, guys.
Boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom. There. Settled.
You're so mean.
Say what?
You're so mean.
I know, dude. I'm dick dad.
God.
Terrible.
I'm appalled, man.
Oh, I have
sensitivity, man.
I have my moments. Believe me.
What's in that tea, man? You gotta chill out.
It's all anger and booze. The tea's just for color, man. Yeah. All right, well, let's get started then.
Okay. Syllabus.
Syphilis.
Syllabus. Syphilis. Check.
How does everything sound on your end?
Loud and clear.
Sound okay?
Yeah.
No weird background noises or anything? Or?
No.
Wonderful. I feel like I hear a fan on your end. Is that just white noise? Is that just digital stuff?
Yeah, it could just be the laptop itself, like a hard drive.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Nothing we can do about that, because if you turn that on, I guess we're back to square.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Welcome back to As the Story Grows. My name is Trav, and joining me tonight is Liam Wilson from Dillinger Escape Plan. Mr. Wilson, how are you?
I never had it so good.
I think I heard that before recently.
Yeah.
That's good. thanks for coming on, man. I know that you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You just came off. You just came off a tour.
I mean, not just. My body arrived maybe 2 weeks ago, but my brain is still arriving in pieces.
Stowed away somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It shifted in during flight.
how was it? I mean,
they're all great. They all have their own, you know, kind of funny pitfalls and characters. And, sure. You know, we had two really great days off. We had a day off in Ljubljana and a day off in Berlin. And we went to this nightclub called the Bergheim in Berlin. And I don't know. I'll leave it at that. It was kind of like that end of the world party in the Matrix. Like, I didn't really think that was a real place. And it was like, whoa, okay.
Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, overall, the shows were good. We did Europe, and then we flew from Belgium to refueled in L.A., then to Auckland, Wellington. We went to Weta Cave and Peter Jackson's studio and Park Road Studios. And and then we did a couple dates in Australia and then flew home and tried to, you know, maintain some kind of sense of self. And I don't know. It was crazy. They're all crazy. They're all crazy in their own way. It's just a lot of motion.
Yeah. Kind of autopilot. What town are we in today? Kind of.
Yeah. Style? You know, and especially when you go from like Belgium to New Zealand, you're kind of like, you're awake for sound check, a meal, the show, you shower, you eat something late because you're awake, and then you just try to like, you try to get on schedule, but you know you're only going to be there for 5 days, so you're kind of like juggling back and forth between whether to like try to get on the home schedule and just like wake up and play between naps, or try to get on that schedule and maybe catch up to it. But like, you know, these are the little battles you play with yourself.
Are they different battles from you joined Dillinger in 2000-ish?
Yeah, yeah.
And for 15 years, are they different battles now? Like back in 2000, it was probably more, I want to adapt to the schedule I'm on here because this is awesome. I'm overseas. I mean, you know, like
one. Yeah, I mean, when I'm in Europe, I try to adapt. I mean, it's not that I don't try. I try to adapt as fast as I can. But when you go that far and you're only there for 6-7 days, it's almost like, it sounds crazy to say that that's not enough time, but as anybody who's really done trips like that, you know, like 2 or 3 days, you're kind of a little messed up if you go that far.
The ones that I have spoken to, musicians that have toured overseas and everything, you know, everybody is under the assumption that I'm seeing the world. I'm not seeing.
You hardly see anything.
It's like standing this close to a train.
Yeah, or you see it from like a windshield, you know, and it's you're seeing it, but I don't know. It's kind of, it's hard. It's like being able to take a photo of it. Like the map is not the territory. You know, driving past the Louvre is not seeing the Mona Lisa.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And when you drive past the Louvre like 6 times, before you get a day off in Paris to go choose like what you're doing for those 4 hours. You know, but that's cool. That's kind of part of the adventure. And like, you know, like I said, we had a day off in Ljubljana, Slovenia, which I've never been to. We kind of woke up and was like, let's rent bikes at this hostel and let's like go find food and, you know, have this like little boyish adventure.
Sure.
You know, let's ride up to the castle and
great. That sounds fun to me. I would try.
Yeah, it's cool.
So the reason that you got led to me, or I got led to you, I should say, is because a couple months ago I spoke to Shelby Sinca.
Okay. Yeah. And,
shame on me, had no idea you had anything to do with Protus.
Oh, well, it was a brief, you know, almost cloaked, you know, ceremony. I mean, it was quick. It was maybe like six months or so, you know. Sure. I think we just kind of got in, got out, banged it out.
Yeah. I found that to be really interesting, though, because I'm always curious just because I'm new at this. This thing's just starting to get off the ground a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I talked to you about Dillinger Escape Plan all day, and this will be the 14th time you said it. I'm always right. trying to find like those little in betweensy cracks.
Sure.
Uh-huh. And I thought you being in Provis was pretty interesting because he doesn't live here, and it's kind of interesting that
was he living here then though? I believe he was.
Was he? Because I don't know. That's
I think he was living here then. Or okay. You know, and I think he's kind of gone back and forth for 6 months at a time. Maybe I'm not quite sure.
Right, right.
But I'm pretty certain he was living in DC at that time because it didn't seem like it was that much of a thing. Maybe he was going back.
Okay.
Or maybe that was the first time he was going soon after and it was kind of an excuse to get up and do it.
Mm-hmm. How did you two find each other?
Well, I met Jason Hammaker on the first Dillinger tour I did, which was an East Coast tour of, U.S. East Coast tour with the Misfits and Murphy's Law and some other bands. I could, you know, try to remember who. And we got to Florida, and Jason Hammaker came out to a show, and he's just such a character, you don't really forget him.
Right.
And I realized, like, oh, this is the dude from Protus that everybody was talking about earlier. Okay. And then a couple months, I guess a couple years later, Dillinger had toured with, or Decahedron, yeah, Decahedron had toured with Dillinger.
Okay. Okay.
So that was when I really got to know them, okay. You know, as such. So that was kind of the catalyst for all that. And then that just kind of, you know, stayed in casual touch. And then, you know, I guess it had to be, what, 2009-ish?
I think so.
I mean, I would say the Decahedron stuff was like 2004, 2005, maybe a little later. But in that time frame. So, you know, I really didn't hear from him for what felt like a couple years. Maybe I ran into Jason here and there. Okay. Actually, Jason came on tour with us after that. That's okay. Totally different sidebar. Anyway, there was always like some, you know, tenebrous connection.
Right.
And then they just kind of gave me a call like, hey, we want to do this South by Southwest show. We thought of you, you know, our original guy or whoever they had playing at the end couldn't do it. And, you know, do you want to do it? And, you know, I'm, again, down for adventure enough. And it was in a time frame that I could do it. And playing with those guys would be, you know, a hoot, to say the least.
A hoot.
And so, yeah, that's kind of how that all went down. Drove down to D.C. a couple times. And then after that, it was, you know, do you want to write a couple songs real quick and do a 7-inch and...
That's the sound lab, right?
Yes. Excellent. We did that really, you know, kind of tried to whip that out, you know, not too fast, but, you know, appropriately quick. Recorded it and, yeah, and then Jason and I last year did a Misfits cover band for Halloween that I think we're doing again this year.
No way.
Yeah. And
where's that going to be?
In D.C., Rock and Roll Hotel, maybe? Was last time? I think. I don't know. I'm probably advertising the wrong place here. You know, edit me appropriately, please.
I'll Google it. I'll look it.
Yeah. It's at, you know.
It's at.
So then Shelby, I mean, there's always something, I think, you know, they stayed at our house at one point. You know, Shelby was on tour, and yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just kind of a modern day friendship.
Cool. All right.
You know, where a lot of it is at least kind of keeping up with each other via Instagram, and
sure, yeah.
You know, that's kind of the pulse.
He's an interesting guy. He's got
he is, man.
He's got the deepest Bandcamp page I've ever seen. Just just while I was talking to him, I counted 66 things, and I was like, dude, you got to help me. I don't know where to start. Like,
yeah.
We got to narrow this down, or I'm going to have like a 10-part episode, you know, but.
Yeah, he's got a lot going on.
Yeah, he's constantly. He's prolific.
Yeah.
I think I'm using that prolific word, right?
Yes.
So in doing some research on you, listening to some podcasts, and I actually had a pretty funny moment. I was driving around working today, and I was listening to, I think it was a meditation podcast, and it was one that you did two episodes with.
Yeah. Okay.
And in the second one, I realized, like, I think I'm on my third Liam podcast, and he hasn't even mentioned veganism yet.
Oh, yeah.
So I write down, maybe I should talk about, you know, being a vegan on the road. I wonder if that's difficult or not. The sure. next sentence, as I was writing it down, you were like, I talk about this stuff because I'm sick of talking about veganism. And I was like, scribble, 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 never mind.
Well, no. I mean, and we can talk about that a little bit.
I'm not a vegan, and I'm not really into meditation, but everything you said was fascinating to me, and I kind of have a tie-in with it.
Right now, I'm kind of, at a crossroads with veganism. Really?
Exclusive. Oh boy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, sort of exclusive, but, no, I mean, just, I think in the last year, I've had a lot of existential things to think about, you know,
okay.
daughter and
yeah, we're going to talk about her.
Yeah. Some other experiences that kind of all culminate. And, I don't know. I just kind of started thinking about how, you know, what started me off and why, you know, with the whole veganism thing, and just kind of readdressing it and kind of just like, I don't know, just taking inventory on a lot of things again in life. And not to say I don't ask myself a lot of questions about veganism and diet and environmental issues, you know, so on and so forth.
Sure.
On a regular basis. But, you know, lately I feel like I've been asking myself those questions and kind of things are falling apart. Hmm. You know, not falling apart, but just kind of like a little loose.
Sure.
One would be, you know, in certain situations, I tried some like farm raised eggs that were like pasture raised, totally organic.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I don't really know what my politics are with this right now, because, you know, when I went vegan and stopped eating eggs in the first place, I couldn't find a cage free egg. I couldn't find an organic egg that didn't exist.
Man,
you know,
You're setting me up exactly what I wanted to talk about.
So, you know, and then like Whole Foods didn't exist and now it does. So
right.
I feel like my politics can change a little bit, you know, or at least I need to be able to ask the question. You know, maybe, you know, a lot of science has supported things that say that plants feel more than we ever thought, you know, yeah, and then we kind of go back into, you know, other things where, you know, or you watch, you know, a David Attenborough thing where they do a time-lapse thing about some plant or some vine, and you're like, that thing's alive.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just on a totally different time scale. So anyway, all these things kind of culminate, you know, add water and stir, drop some kind of psychedelic into the mix, and I'm just scatterbrained about where my moral compass should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that if the whole world were vegan, maybe the scales would be tipped the wrong way. I wonder if my throwing out like 3 or 4 pairs of non-leather shoes that fell apart is worse than throwing out or buying 1 pair of leather shoes that I know are going to last forever.
I understand.
And, you know, are the factories that make these things any better than the factories that make these other things? Is the food that I eat that's processed in a factory to look like meat any better for the environment than eating some like grass-raised beef?
Right.
You know, because ultimately it's not even about the animals or about human survival. I mean, although I think those things are important and the ecosystem is important.
Sure.
If we were immortal or the animals were immortal, then the argument would have some, you know, real weight to it. But, you know, it's more about the environment, which as far as we're concerned is the only immortal thing in the equation. And, you know, should be kind of catered to,
yeah,
to some degree. So all these things, you know, so right now I'm eating some like farm-raised organic pastured eggs and just kind of experimenting oysters, you know, and just kind of figuring out what my politics are there.
Mm-hmm.
Because there again, like it's not a bivalve. It's not like a scallop or a mussel, you know, it's different. And at least for now, for an indeterminate length of time, I'm kind of giving myself an inventory period.
I liked everything that you were talking about in all the prior podcasts that I heard and now, because I just think maybe it has to do with age, maybe it has to do with children, but you use the term taking inventory. I just want to make sure that I'm stopping and not stopping to smell the roses and
pretend. Right. No, but enjoying the process.
Questions. I want to ask questions too. I don't just want to walk through life like Pac-Man and just consuming whatever's in front of me. Right. I've been going through a little bit of a transitional thing too. Never vegan, never vegetarian, anything like that, but definitely blinders have come off, eyes wide open to just how the whole corporate, you know, such a disgusting, it'll turn.
It affects everything. You can find, you can sniff it out in almost any place. Right.
So recently I go to the same tattoo guy. He's been working on both my arms. About a year went by, 10 or 11 months went by. And I walked past him. I was coming into the
tattoo. Don't even recognize him.
Right, yeah. I mean, he usually wears glasses and clean shaven. Now he had contacts and a beard. So that's already going to throw me off.
Yeah.
But he lost so much weight. I walked past him. The same dude that's been sticking me for 10 years. I was like, hey. And I just, hey, buddy, what's up? And I'm Elvis? Like, his name's Elvis.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, you get in the chair and commit to it. You're going to be there for hours upon hours. Dude, I was in that shop for 7 hours. We didn't get started for 3.5 hours. He went off on, it's my kids flashing the lights. They need to talk to me. Hang on. He went off on transcendental meditation.
Right.
He went off on rainbow body. He went off on estrogen. He went off on food, diet. He was even touching flat earth theory a little bit. I was like, dude, this is
different. Okay.
This is a different man. Like,
well, that's what you need to get into, that like suspension of disbelief.
That absolutely,
you know, like that
pause,
state
pause
of
right
like,
there. Yep. Pause right there. I gotta check to see what my kids.
No problem.
Are. Damn it.
That's cool. I respect. I get it. I get
now
it.
I'm gonna yell. Now you're gonna see it.
Yeah, do it.
Getting the belt. Huh? I hope one of you is bleeding. What's up?
We're starving.
Why are you starving? We made you dinner. Absolutely, you may. That's not a problem. But if you're really that hungry, you really think an ice cream cup is going to do the job? You do. Okay, well, then I guess you're good. Come on, Grace, get out of here. Call the dog, please. Liam! Did you hear that?
I didn't see any blood.
My son is absolutely no blood. My son is absolutely starving and would like to know if he can have an ice cream cup.
Oh, well, that's of course going to solve everything.
You really think an ice cream cup is going to hold you over, buddy?
Anyway. I think so. I mean,
so anyway, I'll edit that together somehow.
Yeah, yeah. I was saying something about you know, getting into a state where you can suspend your own disbelief.
Mm-hmm. I would he sent me down a lot of rabbit holes. He sent me down some documentary holes. And I've just been trying to take the blinders off and been questioning a lot of things, watching a lot of conspiracy stuff. I'm driving my wife insane. She's like, oh my gosh, you're like gonna lose it. But very funny that everything that I was listening to with you folded right in with what he was saying. And man, you two should talk. That would be an interesting, interesting conversation. But it just kind of got me to a point where I'm like, all right, flat earth. I don't know. I don't know if I'm there yet, but I love that one of the strongest arguments is, but you've never seen proof other than what other people have told you is proof. So question that.
Yeah.
I like that angle.
Yes.
I don't know.
Well, being more skeptical. Absolutely. It's okay to be skeptical. And I think there's a lot of people that want you to trust things and like trust science, but it's like, I mean, you can only trust it until the next theory comes and usurps that. And
yeah,
you know, it only works for now. Nothing is static.
Right.
And I think that change is the only real, like, you know, constant.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, which is kind of the ultimate paradox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, right? The only definite thing out there is that nothing is definite.
Yeah.
Sounds like a cheesy bumper sticker, but
yeah.
But
bad album title.
Oh, it is? Well, I should scratch that out for my band then. I just thought everything that you were saying kind of laid in with it and made me feel like just another one out there, just questioning, looking into things, asking questions, and I just you don't feel quite so alone when you have your own family members going, come on, Dad, come on, nah, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and sometimes you just got to be like, I don't know, I have no idea.
I don't know. That's why I'm asking and looking. Yeah. Right. More iced tea. So how is it for those of us that have never toured or have ever done anything on the scale that you're doing it with Dillinger? I feel like every time you see, maybe this is a dumb question, but I'll ask it anyway. And if I sound dumb, I'll cut it out. That's how that works. How is it to maintain that sort of conviction and diet when you're overseas? You said, I'm going to take a bike into this town I've never been in, and then I'm going to go buy something to eat. Well, you're in control of it at that point. But when you're running in and out of venues and you have moments to do things and you're waking up from naps to play and everything, how do you maintain everything that you're trying to maintain rather than just consume whatever crap they throw in front of you, you know?
Well, I think 9 out of 10 times in most of the places we're touring in, either A, I've been there before.
Okay.
So some of the groundwork is done. Mm. Or I have friends there. Or I use Yelp or Happy Cow is like another app that'll help me find vegetarian, vegan-friendly restaurants close to where I'm at. So a combination of all those things, a little pre-planning, I can find stuff. And again, not being so strict to the point where I'm not like annoying waiters and waitresses with what's in what. It's not about that. It's not about the less than 2% that may be in something. At least not for me. You know, that's not my battle.
Okay.
Luckily Dillinger has grown to a size where for the most part I can trust that there's going to be some food or enough money or the venue will be near something where I can find something. And if not, I just kind of bring or stock up when I can on some Cliff Bars and, you know, maybe if I go, you know, and, or I know that I'm going to be hungry later. Like I'll buy food when I'm not hungry. Like if I walk past something, I'm like, I'm just going to buy like a small entree.
Sure.
Because I know at like 2 in the morning when nothing is open is when my appetite is going to be like screaming.
Right.
So it's just kind of a lot of that. I mean, there's maybe, like I said, 1 out of every 10 or 20 times where it's just like I just get bunk options.
Sure.
The best story I have is getting a raw green pepper and a plastic knife as my like vegan meal. And it was just, you know, and again, that was 10 years ago. But yeah, that happened in Berlin, which is now voted the world's best vegan city. It's amazing. I mean, truly, it just shows how far things have come.
So, okay, stop, wait, wind it back. A club or a promoter?
A venue handed you a
pepper and a knife. Like
on a wooden cutting board, green pepper, stem still in it, not cut, you know, a plastic knife, and then this stuff called Tartex, which is kind of like a vegetable pate.
It comes
in like a little tuna type can. You peel it and you rip it back and it's like looks like cat food.
Like a paste almost.
It's just like a pate. I mean, it's not bad. Like to put it on bread and then put some other stuff in there. Sure. You know, it's okay, but you know, it's by no means a meal.
And were the other members of the band just
everybody
cheeseburgers and laughing at you?
Yeah, I mean, we were like, I was having, you know, kind of like a private meltdown, but like I think everybody was also so amused at how just bold that is. And then, I mean, we actually left. That was the only time we ever left a tour and went home. Not simply because of that, but that was just kind of like the straw.
Didn't help, right?
It didn't help, and it was just kind of like, you know what, maybe we'll come back and finish this one later. We had a bad promoter at the time. It was We knew what was going on, and we have since fixed it, you know, a decade later. But I really think that everybody cites that as one of the top two or three, like, food stories in Dillinger's history.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, this is called As the Story Grows. Expense, I'm just looking for weird stories. That's funny. Stop for commercial!
The meditation thing. One thing that I talked to with my guy was how being raised Christian, and yep. I know you mentioned in that you came up Roman Catholic.
Yep.
It never ceases to amaze me when speaking about a lot of the Eastern culture and all that kind of stuff. How parallel a lot of it is.
Yeah.
And how. How am I trying to say that? I feel like the first immediate knee-jerk response is to shun that kind of stuff because that's not how we were raised.
Okay.
Then, as you mature and question and start reading those bumper stickers and you get served enough peppers with a plastic knife, you start thinking about
it.
I start talking to more and more people and hearing more and more about it and realize how many parallels there are to all the religions. And I'm not trying to throw them all into one giant pot and stir them up as much as I just wish there were people taking more time to ask more questions, spend more time talking to each other about it rather than fighting and tossing missiles.
Right. And I mean, there's also a certain degree of, like, stop talking about it, you know, especially in that topic. It's almost like just start feeling your way through it.
That's
the
fair.
More you're saying, the less you're hearing.
Yeah.
The less you're listening to exactly. The cosmic voice, the cosmic megaphone, you know, the great big megaphone in the sky that's just telling you, like, just love your neighbor. I mean, we're all saying the same things up here. All these gods are kind of just taking turns at the megaphone and...
But yeah,
the Hindus take a real long time. It's like a filibuster up there. But
I'm too busy trying to tell you exactly how I feel, and you're not hearing anybody else. So all you're doing is turning other people off. And
right,
I went down this conversation with Ben from Cloud Kicker. I just talked to him.
Yeah.
And had a really good conversation with him. And I don't know. I'm just on that topic lately. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a great.
You guys are hitting me at the right time. But anyway,
I mean, I keep thinking like I'm like one third through this ride.
Yeah, right. I know.
Have a good day, and like I it's kind of just that's a little crazy to think that like I feel like I need to get my bags packed or something, and not in some like cult like I need to get my Nikes on kind of way, but I don't know. I mean, I just don't necessarily think that I'm prepared, and most people aren't.
Right. I just turned 40, and I know I've told this story a couple times in a few episodes, so sorry for anybody who's heard it before. But, brother, I'll tell you what. The day before my 40th birthday, I got a kidney stone.
Oh.
It was a half a millimeter. It was so small that the lady said, we're not even going to give you that metal strainer because you'll never find it. Don't worry about it. It'll pass on its own. That thing took me down like I had a steak knife in my back. And I had a lot of time to think while I'm laying around on Percocet, you know.
Yeah.
I was thinking a half a millimeter, like a fragmented part of a grain of sand, took my ass out of commission. Took a grown man down.
Yeah.
And you start to think about the whole grand scheme of things in the universe, and I'm thinking that tiny little thing got into the wrong pipe. And down goes Frazier. You know? And it really made me start thinking, like, that little tiny thing can disrupt so much. It stopped my life for a few days. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How on earth can you ever control? Why are we so obsessed with control? Why are we so obsessed with the illusion of control? And
safety? Well, the thing is that it's – maybe I need to, you know, get schooled a little bit.
I don't know.
It's not necessarily the illusion of control. I think – you know, my big thing lately has been, I feel like I'm typically a very either or kind of person.
Okay. What does that mean?
I just kind of feel like I have very sweeping opinions, and I kind of, it's like, it's black or white, you know, and I realize that I'm not necessarily black and white in my behavior.
Okay.
But I think in certain mental, you know, some of my mental architecture is very that way. So I've been trying to like teach myself to change my narrative and kind of think more in like a both and instead of an either or
mm-hmm.
kind of way. And I could, in addressing the idea of control, I feel like we all know that I'm going to sneeze.
Bless you.
Thank you. We all know that we're going to die and that we don't really have control over everything,
mm-hmm.
but we have an illusion of control because at certain times it's not really an illusion. At certain times you genuinely do have some control, or at least you can fake yourself out to think you have some control for those brief times. So when you do have it,
that's why
you just hold on to it.
Right.
You strangle it
mm-hmm.
because you know that it could change at any moment. You know, and there again, like back to veganism, like I didn't eat that way because I felt like it was going to make me live forever. Like I could get hit by a car tomorrow.
Right.
It was about feeling good right now.
Right.
You know, and that, and morally and everything, you know, just kind of feeling like it's kind of the campsite rule. I just don't want to, I want to leave this place a little better than I found it, if at all possible.
Mm-hmm.
I
know what you mean. Ben and I, in our conversation, the dude from Cloud Kicker is a pilot.
Yeah.
That's why they don't tour. Because he's, you know, he's got.
Is that why they're called Cloud Kicker?
I don't know.
Jeez.
I guess so. Mind blown. He said it always makes him laugh. No, he didn't. He didn't say it always makes him laugh. I think he said he finds it interesting or fascinating to him that.
Which one was it? Come on.
I can't remember, and I don't mean to misquote him, so I'm going to be very soft about it.
Yeah. But.
He said, when the plane hits turbulence, people reach over and they close that little window. And it does nothing to stop the turbulence.
Right.
And they think...
Well, it's distraction.
They think it does. And I said, but if they're... I think they know that that doesn't stop the turbulence. But if for some reason closing that makes them...
Feel like they have control over the situation.
Get themselves under control, then it did work.
Right.
And he was like, that's a good point.
Well, so, yeah, go ahead.
And then you just trickle down. Yeah, but he said, and then, but. And
there was a great, I don't know if you ever listened to Radiolab, and there's other examples of it. But between Radiolab and this guy, Alexander, that I'm friends with, he's a music meditation specialist, or, you know, he does sound meditations.
Okay, neat.
But he's really into the placebo effect and the study of what happens when your brain is on different things.
Okay.
And he suggests that the placebo effect is good for almost 80% of all, like, reported effects.
How about that? Which means we're capable of fixing it ourselves.
So, you know, there again, like, how can you really even quantify what pulling the shade down does?
Right.
You know, on what scale, you know, what tests are you running here and how telescoped out are you?
Right.
You know, and like, yeah. Not to say it doesn't, that it doesn't do anything, but it's almost like if collective consciousness or like, who really knows? I think that's kind of the joy of all of this is the absurdity and the comedy behind that question.
I like the conversation of it though, because you know, in talking to somebody, they'll respond with yeah, but, and if you have an open mind, that yeah, but has to be taken as, that's a good point. I didn't look at it that way. Cause that's another perspective I didn't have. You're sitting, sure. You know, you're sitting from another angle. You've got a whole different life story leading up to that exact moment. My life story led to that moment. We're both at the same one. Well, how are you looking at it? Let me hear it. And walk away a little smarter and sharper.
Do you know who Robert Anton Wilson is?
I don't.
He's a kind of, he's hard to explain, I guess is the best way to put him.
Well then how the hell am I supposed to know who he is?
He's a writer, kind of philosopher.
Okay.
But he recently died, he had post polio. I'm sure it was because of complications with that. He was a huge advocate for medical marijuana in that respect, but he would give these talks and, he would anoint everybody a discordant pope. His whole thing was discordianism. And he would say, you know, spectacles, testicles, wallet, watch. We're now all discordant popes. And what that means is you're all infallible. You are all like, you know, perfect in your mental, you know, constructs of everything. And your, you know, the way you see the world is true.
Okay.
However, when your reality tunnel intersects with another discordant pope's reality tunnel, you are both infallible, you know, so be careful when you intersect with each other because you're both right.
Mm.
You know, in a sense. So, I don't know. He's funny and but kind of dead on in a lot of ways.
Sure. Yeah. I can respect that. What's his name again?
Robert Anton Wilson. People call him like Raw. There's documentaries about him and, yeah, he's just a character. He's got a great book called Cosmic Trigger.
I'll look him up. Any relation?
No, not that I know of. That'd be cool, but
that was a crappy joke. I went for the easy one. Low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Okay. I heard something today on your interview with Kip Winger.
Okay.
That blew my mind.
Okay.
If you told me that I was going to listen to Liam from Dillinger Escape Plan.
Yeah.
Talk to Kip Winger of Winger. And they were going to discuss music. Who is the absolute last band that I would think would come up in that conversation? I bet Believer wouldn't have been on my list. And you mentioned to Kip that you found Dillinger Escape Plan because you were working at a record shop and Jim, I assume Jim Winters?
Well, I didn't find Dillinger necessarily. I was familiar with Dillinger, but Dillinger, Ben and Chris from Dillinger had asked Jim to play bass. And Jim was kind of like, well, I played bass on the Believer record in the studio, but I can't play bass live. You know, and maybe if you were asking me to play guitar, I would jump at the opportunity. But I do know this kid, and he's never seen me play. But he was like, I just know from talking to this kid, Liam, about music that he's not a chump. So Jim gave Ben my number and then came into the store that I was working in and gave me Ben's number. And neither of us called each other because I was just kind of a little psyched out and was, you know, just kind of needed time to process the idea. But the plan was that when Dillinger came to Philly, like not that long after, maybe a month later, that I would meet them and talk to them. So I sat down and I had met them maybe a year ago, but casually.
Okay.
Not as like, I'm a bass player, just like, hey, what's up? How you doing? Like your music.
Sure.
So I sat in their car and I listened to most of Calculating Infinity. They had like just got it mixed. And I was just kind of like, oh man, I have to do this, you know, like and by any means necessary, I have to, you know, at least try out, you know, and that's the end of it. So yeah, anyway, Believer and Jim Winters. Yes. You know, good friend of mine.
Unbelievable, dude. I've been a Believer
fan. Unbelievable.
I see what you did. I've been a Believer fan since I think Extraction from Mortality was my first cassette tape.
Crazy. Right on.
That was I was while I was listening and working, you mentioned Believer. I was like I looked up and I don't know what I expected to see because you weren't there, but I looked around like he's got to be kidding me, right?
No, yeah. I mean,
what a small world. How did you two happen upon each other? You said something about a record shop?
Yeah, I worked in a record store on South Street in Philadelphia called Rock and Roll Plus. It's not there anymore. It was the Nuclear Blast headquarters, and we sold like a bunch of punk rock and metal stuff, t-shirts, cigars at one point.
Huh.
Yeah, it was weird. But it was a good time. I mean, without that place, I met a lot of people and really set my own stage, especially in Philadelphia. Yeah, very, very important couple years.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Just had to get the Believer drop in there.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah, that might be. I'm going to write that down. That might
Unbelievable.
Be Unbelievable. That might be the title of your episode. That's good stuff. Unbelievable. I'm sure I spelled that wrong.
Yeah, Jim Winters just sent me a link to the Tim Ferriss podcast where he talks about whether psychedelics are the new pharmacological like breakthrough.
Really?
It's an amazing episode. Really, really cool episode.
Tim Ferriss.
I'd never heard of Tim Ferriss, and I kind of feel like a turd for not knowing who this guy is.
You can't know who everybody is,
man. That's true.
I was doing research.
I want to know the good ones, of course. I guess I don't really want to know them all right now because then it would give me nothing to reach for.
Right. Good point. You can't fit all the information in there.
No. They come to me when I need them.
That's true. Definitely want to talk about, have you been on a podcast since you had your daughter?
Yeah, I've done a few.
I missed those. I didn't hear anything.
It was one. I've been doing them with this guy. Or this podcast called Midwest Real.
Yes.
I just did another one the other day, and I did one maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago. So
okay.
I talk a little bit about it, but as anybody with kids knows, it changes so fast. So I may be repeating myself, but yeah, there's a lot going on.
That's quite all right. So with the 15-year resume of Dillinger Escape Plan, this would be the first year that you're doing it as a dad.
Yeah.
So kind of a huge question, but how are things differently? How are you perceiving leaving, handling being gone?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely different. You know, before I could just kind of leave, you know, there really wasn't much of a reason not to. And if I wanted to live like a crumb and eat ramen, like I could do that.
Right.
But I can't really do things like that in the same way anymore. You know, luckily I have a great support system. My wife was our tour manager at one point, you know, for a couple of years. So she understands the road. There's, I'm sure, a little envy that I'm out there at times, but, you know, I do have a good support system.
Is she out now? Is she like,
she's home doing other music related work and, working from with home. This company. Yeah. From home. Or close to home.
Sure.
She also works with this company, Blood Milk Jewels.
Blood Milk Jewels.
Little name drop. Anyway. So, yeah, I mean, it's different. It's harder to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, when I left, it was kind of like, oh, I'll just say goodbye. And it turned into like, you know, I'm just like super emotional. I feel like a menopausal woman saying goodbye. Like, I'm never coming back. And,
right.
You know, there's definitely like a separation anxiety there. I mean, mm-hmm. it's definitely like a piece of you. It's not just like, I didn't just make it. It's like literally a part of you. Yes, and that's a really hard thing to understand when it's not really attached to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, that's hard. And she's too young to really, you know, in some ways, she's too young for my sake and her sake.
Right.
You know, like FaceTime doesn't really mean anything yet. And it's kind of bittersweet if I see a video or something like, I'm like, oh, she's really cute. And then I get choked up about it and like have to pull back.
Right.
You know, the other thing I keep saying is that I used to feel like the arrow and now I feel like the bow. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's more about her now. It's, she's the arrow now.
Got it.
So yeah.
All the tension's on you.
Yeah. And just like, it's not really about me anymore. And I mean, I do it, but it's like, I kind of do it for her sake. It's not as much about like, what am I going to get out of this or what am I going to buy when I get home?
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, okay, what can I put, how much of this can I safely put away for her? Kind of things. Or what do I have to get her before I can think about what I need? You know, right. What I kind of maybe just want.
I know exactly how that feels. I had twins in 2002.
What? Oh, man. Yep. From one to three real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, I had one kid for less than an hour. And then the second one came out. And then I had my third one in 2007.
Oh, okay, so you had twins first.
I had twins first.
Oh, okay, I thought you meant, okay.
Yeah, and that was, I know exactly how you feel. It was like everything yeah. We're doing goes to them. And it's like...
Oh, you just kind of, you know, the advice... Buy a
record? No, I probably shouldn't. I mean, I have $15, but I'm not going to because we probably need formula again.
Yeah, the advice I keep hearing is like, don't make any big decisions for 5 years, like especially in your relationship. Like, you guys are both in survival mode. Like, do not, like, lay off each other. You know, just focus on the kid. It's not about you. You know, just hang on.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're on an island. Just look for coconuts and try not to get killed for a while. Don't worry about building a new house yet. And just.
But it's exciting and it feels natural and it's kind of existential and it answers a lot of questions I didn't even realize I was asking. And
that's true.
My relationships with my parents are different. But the way I look back on my childhood is different for better or for worse.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, something like I think about my dad, you know, divorced parents and my dad like dropping me off and not seeing me for 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
And there being like no texting, no photos, no FaceTime, no.
Isn't that crazy?
You know, and
my kids don't even know what the planet is.
It's like, I don't know how my dad ever gave me back to my mom, you know, and vice versa. Like, I never really picked up on the emotional weight.
Right.
Of those kind of things that I, you know, so many of my memories only involve my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And when I kind of pull back and think about like, oh man, what were they going through at that time? And man, my parents were really young and like, you know, things like that. I see people as other people's kids too. Like all my friends are now somebody's kids.
Yeah.
I take their parents into consideration. They're not just like furniture. Not that I ever treated anybody like furniture, but I understand that they're not just people who live with them, that they actually like raised them and dealt with their bullshit and changed their diapers and, you know.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, it's just, you know, they're not just like those old people that my friends live with.
Right.
And answer to, that drive us wherever.
They don't know what they're talking about. They have no idea. Rah, 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 rah.
And yeah, then, I don't know.
After you have kids, you realize... Yeah, they didn't know what they were talking about.
Well, that's
about.
The other thing, too. It's like nobody's parents really knew what the hell they were doing, unless they had like 2 or 3. But even then, like, definitely the first one, you have no clue what the hell you're doing. If you get lucky with like a good kid, maybe, but.
Maybe. You still don't know what you're doing. You're only doing what other people have told you is the right thing.
And what you're doing changes constantly to address new things. Yep. You know, again, like nothing is static. It's like, it changes daily.
What's your daughter's name?
Ziggy.
Ziggy. And how old is she?
She's 10 months.
So she just started moving?
She's been crawling for a couple weeks. She stands up against things and climbs things and doesn't want to lay down.
Game over, bro.
Yeah. She's not quite, you know, not taking freestanding steps, but I can like hold her arms and walk her. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple feet.
Yeah, as soon as they start moving. Oh,
yeah, lots of babbling. I mean, the crawling is crazy. You know, mm-hmm. It's definitely like I'm chasing her around if I put her down. But she independently plays too, so that's nice.
That's great. That's good.
Yeah.
I had a weird thought about listening to you talking about the only podcast that I was hearing up to this point. You were getting ready to have.
Yeah.
And I had a funny thought about you and your daughter, actually, because one of the first times that I ever saw you with Dillinger on video, you know how you just one day you just on a YouTube rabbit hole and I'm going to watch 9 Dillinger shows or whatever.
Yeah.
I think you guys were playing Milk Lizard, which is like a fun song, right?
Sure.
Ben, I've seen Dillinger, I think, 7 times. Ben's insane. I don't know how the man walks after a show.
Sure.
Every live picture you see of Greg, ever since a couple shows where he cut his head open and he had blood running down his face, that's what everybody puts up as Greg's picture now because
he's
menacing and more crazy. And
yep.
Your drummers are always back there running numbers like an accountant and everything.
Yep.
It was that Milk Lizard video. You had cut off shorts and you were like stomping full left to full right. Having a blast. Like if you looked at any other aspect of Dillinger Escape Plan, it was batshit crazy on stage.
Right.
And then Liam is just having the time of his life. And I thought, that's such a cool legacy to leave behind for her once she's born. That she's gonna get to see Greg run over people's heads and just totally being what he is and Uncle Ben is nuts and that kind of thing. And then Dad is just the big one having a blast. Like he's just dancing around and having a good time. And I don't know why I thought of that, but I just remember seeing
footage
of you just horsing around, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if I could pass those, and not to say it's not to be taken, you know, it's not that I'm not taking it seriously. It's more like a blissed out happiness. Like hopefully that's how it comes across. And
that's exactly what I meant. Yeah.
I hope that Ziggy picks up on that being like the only really important thing, you know, like it's not about like how many records Dillinger sells so much as like how much of that time I spent smiling or at least content, you know, that none of that stuff really goes anywhere with you.
Right.
You know, and that all the money in the world doesn't really add up to much unless, you know, and you can ask people who have it, you know, and not to say that alone wouldn't, you know, but I love, there's a David Lee Roth quote that's something like, you know, money can't buy you happiness, but it can buy you a yacht big enough to pull up right next to it. Great.
You didn't have to tell me who that was. I could have guessed David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Such a genius.
Mm-hmm. DLR, love it. All right. I don't really have a lot else to talk to you about. I really appreciate you coming on. And I forgot to write it down. You got involved with another. There's another band named John something.
Oh, John From.
Tell me about John From.
Okay. It's a kind of death metal-ish project. Mostly local Philly guys.
Okay. Anybody we know?
It's this guy, Matt Hollenberg, and he does some stuff with John Zorn. He's got a record out right now called Simulacrum with John Medeski. He also has this band called Cleric. The drummer's our friend Eli Litwin. And then on vocals, we have this guy, Derek, who used to sing for The Faceless.
Oh, all right.
So it's still kind of brewing. You know, I have a lot of big ideas for it. You know, it's death metal, so the ceiling is low. But I really want to make sure it has like an artistic statement to it. So I'm kind of just patiently letting it simmer. I'm in no rush to really get it out unless it's really ready. I mean, we're actively recording and writing and mixing and trying to get it out, you know, by, I guess, like first quarter next year.
Okay. All right.
But that's, you know, we said that this year too, and it didn't happen.
I won't hold you to it. Don't worry. You guys play out?
We did one instrumental show at the Stone in New York City. It's like John Zorn's little club. We do have plans to play out, but because the singer lives in LA and the rest of us live in Philadelphia, it's not really worth it until we can do like a couple shows, or at least, you know, book a few in the same general area for us to go out there, for him to come here. But yeah, I mean, it's something I am taking really seriously, and I think it's will probably be the best example of some of my ideas about music and marketing. And, you know, there's certain ideas with Dillinger that like just wouldn't work because Dillinger already exists, and certain things have already, there's just been certain doors that are just left open and certain veils that have already been removed.
They're already Dillinger.
Yeah, they're already Dillinger. Right, so, right. You know, there's certain ideas that you can only really do once with a first impression. So things like that, you know, it kind of allows me to explore that stuff, not just musically, but just kind of like the marketing and the aesthetics and things like that, that, you know, it's a clean slate.
Gotcha. Okay. That's interesting. So, yeah.
And it kind of, cause there's just things that, you know, it allows me to focus on Dillinger as that, and yeah, it allows me to focus on this as this and not let them kind of cross contaminate each other and let, you know, I mean, there's always going to be a little bit of communication just simply because of my existence in both. But, you know, to some degree, it's almost actively like, you know, whether it's a Dillinger sounding part or another band sounding part, it's a lot of, no, that sounds too much like this, you know, or like, I can't have it rip off myself. Let's go in this other direction and really push it, you know. So it's cool. You always end up with something. You know, 99% of the time you end up with something way cooler and more unique anyway. So
cool. That's
yeah,
that's good to hear. I'm glad stuff like that exists.
Yeah. It's kind of a therapy session for now, but eventually it'll, you know, become something else.
Good. And probably some shows in Philly, huh?
I hope so. Yeah. Yeah.
Me too. Cause I live an hour north of you.
where are you exactly?
Bethlehem.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with that area.
I was born in Norristown, moved up here when I was 3.
Okay. Yeah. I actually lived in Norristown for a little while, and, you know, where Sycamore Road is, or Sycamore Street, kind of over near where Vegan Treats is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have, relatives who live sort of over in that area.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. I know where you're talking about.
Yeah. I know Vegan Treats, and, that's right down the street from the Cup. It's right across the street from Compact Disc Center. Yep, I know it well.
Right up.
Yeah. Small world. How about
that? Yeah, yeah.
Liam, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, Matt, thank you.
I'm going to let you get back to Ziggy.
And, okay, right on.
I will be in touch with you as to when we're going to put this up.
And, cool. You know, we'll talk again as needed.
Yeah, man. Thanks right so on. Much.
Yeah, it's good talking to you.
Take care, a great man. Night. You too. I smell that whore. Bring me a brick. Hey.
Love you. Take care. Bye-bye.